sit right back and you'll hear a tale of a fateful trip.
In the year 1831, biologist Charles Darwin began a fateful journey on the HMS Beagle. On that journey, Darwin formulated the controversial theory of evolution, which has impacted society down to this day.
Our goal is to punch holes in that theory, so we'd like to welcome you to
Sink the Beagle.
Fire one, Captain!
Way to go, Stan. Nice shooting. Well, not bad this late at night.
Well, you know, we're going to send Darwin personally down to the watery depths today. I am Stan Hudson.
And I'm John Kurlinski. Welcome you to another episode of
Sink the Beagle, where we take a lighthearted look at the serious issues of creation, evolution, where we came from, where we're going. And today we are going to focus on one of the fellows who's had probably as big of impact in the area of origins and where we came from, supposedly, of anybody who's ever lived, and that's Mr. Charles Darwin himself.
Oh, Chucky there. Actually, Darwin, the person who actually influenced him the most is his grandpa, Erasmus. You know, we like to give Charles a lot of credit, but if I understand my history correct, a lot of the stuff that Darwin thought and taught, the origins of all of that come out of his grandfather's notes, don't they?
From his grandfather's notes and books and everything, although his grandfather was dead before Charles was born, so there wasn't physical contact, but there's no doubt that there's some genetic stuff going on, a little heredity being passed on, as well as the influence
probably
of his.
Probably enjoy reading grandpa's stuff.
Sure.
Grandpa was a very
Erasmus
man.
Darwin was most definitely an evolutionist, and years before Darwin was ever a light in his mother's eye.
Yep. Charles Darwin, people want to look at Charles Darwin, he teaches Darwinism, which is evolution and change.
Yes.
And there is lots of phrases involve the word evolution or Darwinist.
Yes.
You know, and one of them is social Darwinist.
Social Darwinist, that term has been around a while, and for a while, people who are pro-Darwin have not been happy that he himself has ever been labeled that.
Just for education of the listener this today, a social Darwinist is someone who believes that societies, people groups, so to speak, some are superior than others.
Yeah.
We would call it racism in our day today. That's why, matter of fact, Darwin's book, The Origin of the Species, that's all people want to say. But the real title of the book is The Origin of Species.
And the Preservation of Favored Races.
And that last phrase, favored races.
It's a broader term than just animal life. And
yes.
So
behind this term is what we'd call social Darwinism.
Well, Darwin seems to have had a bend that way, even though that's not PC for folks who like to support Darwin.
And nor is it necessarily all that he intended by that title. He probably meant more than just human races, but it also meant, in many ways, it did include the human race.
Well, let's talk about his views in a recent book that's just come out, I think.
There's a book from Darwin to Hitler, written by
Darwin
Richard Weikart.
Darwin to Hitler, that's a step.
That's a step. Well, we noticed the flow of the idea.
Okay.
Basically, when you go back to an example of Darwin's claims, you know, people don't like it, but he wrote a letter to a guy named William Graham, dated July 3rd in 1881. Darwin wrote this. And I'll just quote him in this letter. He says, "I could show fight on natural selection having done and doing more for the progression of civilization than you seem inclined to admit.
Okay.
Remember what risk the nations of Europe ran not so many centuries ago." Now, Darwin's writing in 1881.
Yes.
Not so many centuries ago. What was Europe doing? It says, "of being overwhelmed by the Turk."
The Turks.
They were fighting the Turks. The Ottoman Turks were fighting in Europe. "And how ridiculous such an idea now is." In other words, it's so ridiculous the Ottoman Turks are anything anymore. Why? "The more civilized so-called Caucasian races have beaten the Turkish hollow in the struggle for existence. Looking to the world at no very distant date," in other words, looking in the future now, here's Darwin speculating.
Prophesying.
Darwin's a prophet. "What an endless number of the lower races will have been eliminated by the higher civilized races throughout the world."
Lower races and higher races. For anybody to say that nowadays, they would be barred from public speaking.
They'd be barred from public speaking. They actually probably would be considered inciting a race riot and we slapped in jail for hate crimes.
And this is Darwin writing in the late 1800s.
Yes, 30 years ago. The point that Darwin is making is sitting there saying he would see, and that was the age in which European, and you can see, well, you know,
English.
To a degree, the English, the German, the Dutch, Portuguese, a lot of Europe modern Europe was colonializing much of the, quote, uncivilized world.
Yeah,
and you can see how that attitude of superiority has done as much to contribute. This is beyond the days of slavery in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but the point is the mindset of superior racism was very much ingrained. And it's not a religious thing. It wasn't the missionaries who taught that.
Right.
Because the missionaries educated the tribes which they came to witness to, taught them, and tried to share Christ with them.
And believed that we're all of one blood, as Paul said, all nations of one blood.
But however, the colonial materialists tended to look at that as less and looked at more as brutes or more animalistic, or they didn't have as nice. They didn't have wool suits.
Well,
they had on a loincloth. Of course, you look at the equator, a wool suit would not be the last thing you'd want to wear.
Yeah, exactly. It's a little warm down there. But, you know, secular humanism was pouring through the cracks, shall we say, in Europe in the 1800s. And we had not just Darwin, but others like Karl Marx and some others, Sigmund Freud. All of these were secular humanists that were trying to explain, shall we say, the world without the person of God being in the picture.
And thus, if nations develop, species develop, we can see subhuman species maybe.
Yeah. Well, I mean, if we're all from animals, we're all evolved, then there's no big deal here. There's no issue. And again, if you remove God and the morality that God brings to the picture, well, then it's just survival of the fittest. And why not survival of the fittest on the national level?
Yeah. And they want to, the defenders of Darwin like to blame it on a Herbert Spencer. And of course, Herbert Spencer was a villain to a degree. But it really was not, Darwin was not foreign to the idea nor opposed to the concept. He actually promoted it as well.
It might have been, it might have been raised a little hotter than it needed to be. But there's no question that Darwin was thinking along these lines. And again, how could he not think this if he did in his own thinking, as he especially talked about later in his life and in his autobiography, when he began to doubt the existence of God and then more or less in a practical way simply disbelieved the existence of God altogether? And what are you left with? You have to come up with models for why is the world the way it is? Why are nations, why is the British Empire so situated in the world that the sun never sets on the British Empire in the middle 1800s, the Victorian age?
Yeah.
And again, there's got to be some reason for it. It's because we are superior.
And that of course, carried over to its ultimate extreme when to Adolf Hitler.
Oh, yeah.
But even to get to Adolf Hitler, it started with Darwin. Matter of fact, in 1868, Darwin wrote to the German Wilhelm Preyer, a letter to a diplomat in Germany. He wrote, "The support which I receive from Germany is my chief ground for hoping that our views will ultimately prevail." You know, our views of civilization, our views of race, sex, nationality, diplomacy, colonization, they will prevail, and the Germans give us hope.
Well, so he found fertile ground in the German soil, did he?
And as a result of that, you have you go from Darwin and the biologist Ernest Haeckel.
Yes.
And then that gets
Haeckel's
transferred
drawings,
into the philosophy of Friedrich Nietzsche.
Okay.
And from Nietzsche, you go from Nietzsche then to Adolf Hitler. That is the chain.
Kampf.
That is the evolutionary chain of thought. Darwin, social Darwinism and Hitler liked Darwin. There is no doubt in historical writings that Hitler was a fan of Charles Darwin. So was Stalin.
Well, and so was Karl Marx, because Karl Marx originally asked Darwin to write the preface in his book. He Darwin, for whatever reason, declined to do that.
Well, one of the reasons that they say in history is that his wife was a much firmer believer.
Yes.
And because of sensitivities to his wife, who was 100% religious, they think that maybe out of deference to her, he decided not to write in the book because of her faithfulness or loyalty to her.
He loved his wife, and his wife was a committed Christian, and that did get to be kind of sticky, I would think, at times.
Yeah. The book does compare, just notice two statements from Nietzsche's Will to Power, then following one, Mein Kampf. From Nietzsche, it says, "The biblical prohibition, thou shalt not kill," this is Nietzsche now speaking, is a piece of naivete. Compared with the seriousness of life's, capital L, own thou shalt not, issue of to decadence, thou shalt not procreate. Life itself recognizes no solidarity, no equal right between the healthy and the degenerate parts of the organism.
Okay.
Yeah, that's Nietzsche. Sympathy for the decadence, equal rights for the ill-constituted, that would be the profoundest immorality, that would be anti-nature itself as morality. Now Hitler says, A stronger race was to plant the weaker, since the drive for life in this final form will determine every ridiculous fetter of the so-called humanness of individuals in order to make place for the true humanness of nature, which destroys the weak to make place for the strong.
Yes.
So you have, you find that Mein Kampf claims that, moves on and follows it. It really sets the table for the racism that exists and puts in Hitler's mind the justification for the final solution.
Mm-hmm. And of what was the final solution?
The final solution was elimination of the Jews mm-hmm. as a race.
And as an inferior race to the Aryan people of Germany.
Yeah.
And, kind of, shall we say, moving survival of the fittest quickly down the line.
And yet the interesting thing is that scholars today, evolutionary scholars, there's an element of what we call political correctness where you make a slip up. You make a reference like, I think of not too long ago, Trent Lott had to resign because he made just a reference to Strong Thurmond back in the days when Strong Thurmond was kind of running on,
wasn't he Ku Klux Klan?
Ku Klux Klan or something years ago. And he was over 100 years old. This happened long before the Civil Rights Act. Not that it was ever justifiable. By the way, racism is our English term. It's a euphemism, an English term for damnable hatred is really what it is.
With no
legitimate basis. Mm-hmm. So if a person who's a racist, he's basically exercising damnable hatred, and we give it a polite term called racism. But the point is that Darwin has left a lot of people, his theory has left a lot of people in the grave.
Mm-hmm.
The reality is that the implications of his theory, a godless theory of origins, you go from Hitler to Stalin. I mean, Stalin was not exactly what you'd call a Sunday school teacher.
No, not at all.
And made Hitler look a whole lot nicer than
millions of people's blood on his hand.
And that all results from a theory gone astray, from the concept of evolutionary thought going to social Darwinism. It's a very negative term. Yet a very true term.
Mm-hmm.
You have a torpedo text there for us?
Well, I am thinking along the lines of Isaiah 42. And Isaiah 42 gives an image of Jesus when he would come and how he would, deal with inferior people. Can I put it that way?
Sure.
It says, a bruised reed he will not break, and smoking flax he will not quench. He will not break a bruised reed. In other words, he's gentle when he comes, Isaiah 42:3. When he comes, he will be kind to those that are inferior, that have been trampled on.
Weakest of the species are the most precious in his sight.
And that's just opposite of survival of the fittest.
And it's interesting, the Bible wants the gospel to go to every nation, tribe, kindred, tongue, people. Doesn't say just to you of this color, this race, that race. The song Brown and Yellow, Black and White.
Yes, yes.
All are precious because that's how he feels about this
Paul
world.
Paul said that in Christ there is no Greek, there is no Jew, no male, no female, no slave, no free. We are all one in Christ, and being a Christian cuts across all social and racial barriers and levels of superiority, etc., etc. So I don't think in this area you could find greater difference between Charles Darwin and Jesus Christ.
And you can't find greater distance in that respect in the ultimate level between an evolutionist and a creationist.
Yes.
Because this is where we differ on the greatest level, and we think that ours is superior morality because ours is superior religion, which is based on a true God.
And superior love.
And so tune in again to another
Sink the Beagle.
Thanks for listening to Sink the Beagle. We'd like to send you a special gift just for being with us today. Write to our email address, beagle@lifetalk.net, and ask for your free copy of Dr. Dwight Nelson's book called Built to Last, A Thoughtful Look at Creation and Evolution. Ask for Built to Last when you write to beagle@lifetalk.net. And be sure to listen in next time to another episode of Sink the Beagle.
So join us here each week, my friend. You're sure to get a smile. From seven stranded castaways here on Gilligan's Isle.